Thank you, Mary. We were in Barnes & Noble's one day, I think it was last summer, in the kids section, buying books for the grandkids. And Marcy always takes a long time looking at those books, so I have a tendency to start picking up other books and reading them. And this book caught my attention. And I think it caught my attention because of the title of it, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And as I started looking at that book and looking inside, I discovered the kid's name was Greg. And I really began to identify with him then. And as I went on and started reading the stories, I realized that Greg Heffley was a middle school student who was just always the butt of everyone's jokes. I identified with that. The kid who just couldn't dribble a basketball, I really identified with that. The kid that would rather be sitting in photography class or science class or something rather than out on the football field. And I really began to identify with this kid. And then I went and looked up what wimp means. Timid or unadventurous person, not a leader among men, a person with no effect on others, someone who lacks confidence. And then I had someone tell me, well, that describes you real well. Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I've looked at some of the wimps in the Bible. I found one recently, Gideon. Gideon was a wimp who became a warrior. If you look in the book of Judges and you start reading the whole story of Gideon, you realize that he had this major inferiority complex and he considered himself a loser. When God came to him and told him he had a job for him to do that involved being a warrior, he told God, I'm the least in my family, and I am from the least of all the families of Israel. That's really playing the part of a wimp, putting yourself way down here. I am not qualified for this job. But as I look at the whole story of Gideon, I realize that God chose him to be a leader because he wanted to teach the nation Israel and Gideon a lesson about what it means to depend on God for strength and success rather than on themselves. If you're the strongest person and the greatest warrior, it's easy to go out and win a war. But if you're the wimp, you have to depend on God. We talk about depending on God. We talk about trusting God. We talk about God having the answers for all of life, but yet it's really hard to learn to live that way and to express that faith. As I look through Judges, especially chapter 6 through 8, I find some lessons for us to learn. The story of Gideon is really simple. The Israelites have the Midianites chasing after him and winning battles and harassing them. If the Midianites, it became a battle of who had the most fertile ground, who could raise their crops the best, who could have the grazing grounds for their animals. And so when the Israelites had all this good ground around them, if the Midianites, who were stronger at the time, found them with fresh wheat, they stole it, no problem. If they found them with grazing animals, they took them, no problem. We find Gideon in one part of the story using a hidden wine press in a small valley to thresh the wheat. He didn't want anyone to see he was there. They lived in caves rather than setting their tents up. It was wild, a wild way to live, scared, afraid of every second, watching your backside all of the time for fear of what was going to happen to you. And yet Gideon led his people out to a very unusual victory. As I looked through the story, I found, I think, six keys to unlocking the power of God in our lives. First one I see is having an undeniable call in the face of uncertainty. Look at Judges 6:12 with me. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Now imagine you're standing out in the middle of a field and you're doing your thing and all of a sudden this voice comes down from heaven and says, "I, God, am with you. You are a mighty warrior." And you're standing there thinking, "But I'm this little wimp who can't do anything. I'm afraid to even speak up for fear someone's going to knock me silly." And God's telling you different. God was trying to get his attention and get him to know, here is what you need to do. If you look down through verses 14 and 16, you find the Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not the one who's sending you?" "But Lord God," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." It was a call to action. It was an assurance from God that he was with me. But Gideon asked for a test. I keep finding Gideon asking for tests. He said, "Lord, if it's really you, I'm going to prepare some meat and bread, and I'm going to put it on an altar, and I'm going to worship you. If it's really you, take that offering by fire." If you look down to verse 17, you find Gideon replied, "If I now have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me." And you look on down there a ways, you find that when Gideon took and put all this on the altar, God came down with a great ball of fire, and that thing just disappeared now, instantly. A sign to Gideon that God was going to answer his prayer. And God told him, "You will not die. You will be successful. You need to go out and take care of some things for me." There's an interesting side note here. Gideon built a new altar and named it Jehovah Shalom. The Lord is peace. Peace. It was the word for Gideon's new transforming relationship with God. I've been thinking about this thing of peace all week. Peace in the midst of the storm. Peace that passes all understanding. And as I looked at that, I found something that made sense. The peace of the Lord prepares us for battle, for anything within us, for any of our relationships, for any of our surroundings, which could rob other people of peace. No matter what I'm going through, it's that inner peace that enables me to live in immense conflict without fear. What is peace? It's God's favor. It's God's affirmation. It's God's blessing. It's part of God saying to us, "I have called you to this. You've answered the call. Go and do it." And we just rest simply knowing we're following God's way. The second thing I see is we have to have an unswerving obedience to God. People back in those days were worshiping Baal. And they set up what were called Asherah poles, which were just tall poles with their gods on top of them that they worshiped. They had the god of fertility. They had the god that watched over their agriculture. People wanted their crops to grow. And so they always had these two gods before them that would protect them, that would make their crops grow, that would bring the rains, that would make the ground fertile, that would keep everything going. As I think about that, I think about the Ten Commandments, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And yet, here they are with this Baal statue in the family fields. I was probably one of those tall things like those crosses I mentioned a few weeks ago, different parts of the country you go to, that you can see for several miles as you go down the highways. Gideon had to clean up his own backyard, and God told him to take that Asherah pole, that statue of Baal, and to tear it down, and he did it. Now, I want you to stop and think. His forefathers, his dad, his grandfather, all of his uncles, all of his relatives depended on those gods to be there in their fields to protect them. And yet here is Gideon going out and tearing this thing down. Had to be scary for him to buck the family system. The Israelites feared total dependence on God. They didn't know what they would do without their other gods. So for Gideon to do that really was stepping out on faith, was really trusting God. I think about that god Baal, and we look at that and we think, "Oh yeah, that doesn't happen now." But I wonder, how often do we believe in God, yet we draw our security from what we have or we are, from our accomplishments or from our self-image or from other what others say about us? And I have to ask myself once in a while, what is keeping us from totally obeying God? What is the Baal? What is the Asherah pole in your backyard that needs to be torn down? That keeps you from totally obeying God in everything you do. The third thing I see is we need God's unlimited power. In Judges 6:34, we find a verse that says, "The Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon and he blew a trumpet." When he realized that God's Spirit was with him, he let loose with his trumpet blast that began to call the troops to come and join him in this great battle that they were going to go out and do. Gideon, frightened, inadequate, the youngest and the least important family in the valley, was now calling others to war. I think of Paul, I think of others in the Bible who were the weak ones. Paul saying, "I have a thorn in my flesh. When I'm weak, I'm strong." So I have to stop and ask myself, what is our greatest weakness? What is the thing that can hold us back the most? And I have to be reminded that God can use it and work through it. I find Gideon constantly going to God and saying, "Is this the right thing to do? Am I following your way?" And so I say we have to have an unquestionable answer to prayer for guidance. I find an interesting part of this story, and we've probably heard it all of our lives. I'm going to put out a fleece and see if God answers it. And I think it comes out of the story of Gideon. Gideon literally threw a piece of cloth out on the ground at night. And before he went to bed, and he said, "Lord, tomorrow morning, when I get up, I want to see if this is really your will that I lead these troops. The grass all around it be dry. No dew overnight got on it, but that cloth be totally wet and drenched out there in the middle of the field." I can see Gideon going to bed that night and thinking, "Yeah, every morning I get up and I walk through the grass and my feet just get drenched. They get soaked. I'm free on this thing. I don't have to do what God told me to do. I'm going to be free on this one." So Gideon gets up the next morning, and you see him getting out of bed and stepping outside of the house and noticing that everything's dry. Can you see him walking down some places where there's more grass and noticing that his feet are not getting wet? Can you see him getting down to where that cloth is laying on the ground, and can you see him picking it up and it's just literally dripping with water? The Bible tells us that he got it and he took it and he drenched it out and just wrung it out, and he got a bowl full of water out of it. How many times has God answered a prayer for you in a very unusual way? And you've just said, "Okay, Lord, I got to do it." But can you see Gideon not really satisfied with that answer? How many times have you prayed to God and asked him to give you an answer and you just didn't like the answer when it came? I kind of think maybe that's where Gideon was. And so that next day he said, "Lord, now tomorrow when I get up, I want all the grass around me to be wet, just sopping. But I want that cloth out in the middle of that field, bone dry." Can you see him going out and just throwing the cloth out in the middle of the pasture? Can you see him getting up that next morning and walking out and, "Hooray, my feet are getting wet"? I was out the other day in the snow and foolishly put tennis shoes on rather than my heavier boots. And I came in and I realized my shoes were sopped and my socks were sopped and my feet were sopped and my pant legs were sopped from where they had drug in the snow. And I thought, "Man, I'm freezing to death now. My feet are cold." Gideon walking out there, everything getting wet. And then he came to that cloth and it was bone dry. I can see him out there squeezing that thing and nothing coming out of it. But his feet were sopped. the grass was sopped. And God had answered his prayer. You know, there comes a point in our lives when we just have to realize that this is God's way and I have to go do it. The Lord sometimes uses outside events and influences as a confirmation of what he has been telling us all along. This is the way. Walk in it. I have to tell you, when you're uncertain about something, don't be afraid to go talk to God about it. Don't be afraid to ask God for a sign. He will answer you dramatically and let you know what his way is. Next thing I see in the life of Gideon is sometimes we have to have an unlikely strategy. It's been estimated that there were 135,000 Midianite warriors. Gideon's army had 32,000 men. I don't know about you, but I don't like those odds at all. And yet when Gideon started talking to God, God told him, "You have too many warriors. Do something about it." And as God gave him the instructions, he called his men together and he yelled really loud, "If any of you are afraid, go home now." He ended up with 10,000 left. I don't like those odds either. God came back to him and said, "You have too many men left." And so Gideon took the 10,000 down to the big lake or the pond or whatever was there. And he yelled, "Guys, you're thirsty. Drink water." And according to God's instructions, he watched. Those who got down on their knees and stuck their faces in the water and lapped the water up like a dog, he sent home. The ones who knelt down and got the water in their hands and scooped it up and sipped it out of their hands while they were looking around, he kept. Because those were the ones who would be aware of their surroundings, aware of what was going on, aware if other troops were coming after them. And so God told him to keep those men, all 300 of them. A very unusual strategy. And yet they went and they attacked the Midianites at night. They waited until it was time for the changing of the guard, and they waited until most everybody was asleep, and then the guys looked up around them, and here, on the hills around the city, 300 lights, the shouting, the trumpets in the middle of the night. And if you could have stood there and counted the lights and figured X number of men per light, you'd have looked at those 300 lights around there and figured 32,000 men were about to come down on you in the middle of the night. 100 to 1. One leader with a light and 100 men behind them. For that was the standard of those days. And so the Midianites got scared. They got upset. It was confusion in the middle of the night. They began to kill each other. And the rest of them ran away out of fear. And the amazing part of it is, the Israelites didn't even have swords with them. And yet they won the battle, doing it God's way. Not man's way, but doing it God's way. I got to tell you, if we're going to win battles, we've got to have an unflinching courage that comes from God, preparing us with his assurance. We have to know we're doing God's work in God's way, so we have that courage. We have to know where God wants us, so we have the courage. So the thing I left out of the story, Gideon still had some questions. Just amazes me. God took the offering by fire. God answered his prayers of the fleece. God put all this together. And yet Gideon and a servant of his snuck into the Midian camp to overhear their fears and their dreams and what they were talking about. And they talked about one guy who had a dream that ended up, God has given Midian in all the camp into the hand of the Israelites. That was when Gideon decided he could go into battle with God's help. How do I unlock the impossible things in my life and get things moving in a positive direction for God? I pray. I listen attentively. I have to be aware of the message that God is sending me. Gideon was just an ordinary person who did extraordinary things, but he followed God and he trusted him. I look at the things that we as God's people are going through. I look at the things of this coming week and I say, how is your week going to measure up to what God's asking you to do? Are you going to be able to get out there and do it in God's name? Let me tell you, if you're going to, you've got to have faith. We are called to a life of faith. Without faith, it is impossible to believe God, to please God. If God says do it, we got to jump and say how high. And just get in there and get working on it because God said it. We can believe it. That should be good enough for us. We're called to a life of faith. We're called to a life of preparation. I see Gideon preparing in so many ways. Last week I spoke about putting on the full armor of God, the breastplate of righteousness, the sword of the Spirit, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation. Shodding with the shoes that help us run to the gospel of peace. The things that we need to make it through every day, powerfully effective with God. If I'm not prepared through prayer for the battle, I'm not going to make it. And then we're called to a life of action. That life of action says, I can't just sit around and expect God to do it all. I need to get out and get moving on what God has asked me to do and live a full life powerfully for Him every day, glorifying His name everywhere I go. Father, so many of us so often are just ready to sit back and just throw in the towel and give up. I think it's because we haven't prayed enough, we haven't prepared enough. And it's just hard to take action. Father, lift us up today as your people. Give us the courage to go on for you. Give us the courage to fight the battles that we need to fight every day. Father, thank you for your mighty power within us. Amen. You are free to go.